Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, by myself, I'm joined by Tom Feely and Craig Hughes of the Well Society, where we'll react to the news of the Well Society's takeover of Motherwell Football Club. We'll also talk about some on-field matters as well, by going over the 2-0 defeat to Dundee and previewing Saturday's home game against Partick Thistle. Guys, welcome along.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Aaron. Cheers.
Well, I can only imagine it's been a busy couple of weeks. The news came, as we've kind of discussed in the podcast before, quite out of the blue almost, because we hadn't anticipated that the big announcement was near. How big a moment was that for you guys after so much hard work?
I think certainly, you know, it probably, when you say a few weeks, I mean, the whole exercise has dragged on for enough a long time. It's been a lot of involvement, especially in recent months. So, and probably the truth of the matter is, we had probably even hoped that it was going to sort itself out quicker. You know, there's an awful lot of paperwork to do, getting solicitors involved. And it probably even took a wee bit longer before we were 110% happy it was ready to go. So, in theory, the announcement could have been a wee touch quicker. No outrageous amounts quicker, but it could have been a wee touch quicker. But, obviously, we've been heading this way for a long, long time, so obviously it's brilliant to have got here.
I think it was a bit of relief as well. You know, it was just I said, kind of dragging out. It was a case of we'd announced to the supporters and to the members that we'd went into negotiations with Les, and then it kind of, as you said, it went longer than expected because of due diligence and because everything had to be done. So it was frustrating not being able to, you know, because it's with solicitors, you can't really say as much as you'd like. So it was frustrating because you knew fans were kind of, you know, what's going on, what's happening with it. So you had to get everything kind of done before you could announce it. So probably came as a bit of, you know, a bit sudden, but as Tom said, it was, you know, it was worked on for a large period of time, so it was a relief to get it out. And then again, we expected this to be the kind of start of the hard work. And you know, people said about celebrating fan ownership, but it didn't feel like that to us. It felt like, right, this is now where the real hard work kicks in. This is where we have to get things, you know, totally right, get the messages totally right, and this is our chance to now we're in a stronger position to now get the message properly out to fans and be able to say everything you really want to say.
Yeah, that being said, though, I would imagine that the last couple of weeks, the interest and the demand from the Motherwell support, and you see a lot of supporters from other clubs as well, so impressed that Motherwell have achieved fan ownership. The media demands, the possible administration demands of new members and everything else, that must be a bit difficult to deal with, but exciting at the same time.
Definitely, it's exciting to read. I mean, generally the kind of responses we got was positive, you know, from a lot of the Motherwell fans. Obviously, people still have their questions, and you know, it still has to be answered, and they still have to be assured that it's the right thing for the club. But overall, it was a positive response we got from the media, from the supporters, and as you said, from clubs all over the place. Where you know, we're taking the time to tweet us and congratulate us. I think it is a quite exciting thing, and it's quite, you know, because it's new in Scottish football, and particularly for the top flight in British football, the first club to do it, there is quite a lot of eyes on you. So as much as a challenge, it's quite an exciting one.
Has there been a positive swell in the numbers since the announcement a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I think just doing a kind of update on them, we're, you know, verging on the 2,000. So, I mean, that's, I mean, and including, you know, there was previous members who've come back and pledged. I think over the last kind of couple of weeks, we're looking at kind of about 90-odd new pledges coming in the last couple of weeks, which is fantastic. There's still ones coming in, you know, on a daily basis. So it has been, you know, a good increase. I think other members we're hearing from, or other fans, sorry, are waiting for the next kind of announcement, how it's all going to work, and then they'll make that, they'll make the decision, which is fine. It's now our responsibility to, you know, deliver that. But it has, the original uptake has been, has been excellent. It's been positive.
But I think one of the thoughts in that kind of side of things, Craig, I think a lot of the guys that have been involved since the early stages, they probably have let it fall by the wayside. I mean, they took out their membership, they were paying their annual renewal fees, and I think over a period of time, the whole thing just seemed to quieten down a wee bit, and a lot of these guys maybe just lost interest a wee bit. They stopped kind of paying their annual renewal fees because the annual renewal total fee total was becoming a bit less in the passage of time, you know, that had been a way back at the very beginning in the first year. But just as Craig says, I think now that it's all newsworthy again, I think a lot of these guys that have stopped paying their annual renewal fees and had not in their place been making pledges, I think all of a sudden they'll come back, and it might even be early days yet. I'd like to think there's a big batch of them. We'd still see it that way in the weeks to come, you know, as more and more and more information gets put out there.
Yeah, that's quite a big point. I think the fact that there was, including myself, I must admit, I was involved from the start and then kind of backed off as things seemed to stagnate. And I wouldn't even say it was losing interest. I think it was kind of becoming disengaged and not feeling part of the Welsh society as a member.
It didn't quite develop maybe in the way that we initially hoped it would. I mean, I suppose the way back to the very beginning, the initial thought is we have to raise, you know, 1.5 million quid. And then it was maybe reduced to a level of 1 million quid. And as soon as we were not going to reach these totals, it probably was going to stagnate a wee bit because that detailed plan wasn't going to take shape at that particular point in time because we couldn't quite get to that level. So there probably was going to be a lull over that period in time until things started developing a bit differently, you know, and Les Hutchison's time involved in it. So it has changed, and there was tremendous at the start, the interest we had and the annual fees we were generating. It then did take a big dip, but hopefully now that it's all signed and sealed, it's coming back.
I think especially with, as I said, with fan ownership being a completely new concept, it was about finding the right kind of model, and there was obviously teething problems, and there still, you know, there still will be things that will get better along the way. I think it's finding that balance between the kind of romantic idea of fan ownership when it first comes out, when, you know, people think how involved they can be, and, you know, will it be day-to-day decisions that they're actually making at the club, and then looking at what's actually functional for the club. You know, you can't every decision go to the fans and say, what do you think? Well, go to a vote on every single thing. But you can involve them in more ways. So I think we've looked at ways of, you know, improving that, and especially getting help with groups like, you know, Paul Goodman and supporters, the Scottish Football Supporters Association, Supporters Direct, groups like that, see how they would kind of suggest the working. We've got a chap from Union Berlin coming over in a couple of weeks to show us kind of how it's worked for them over in the Bundesliga, because they're obviously, you know, the best in the world at doing it, so to find out what would be the right mix for us. But it's a case that there's no real model to follow in Scotland, because we are the first club of this size that's really achieved it. There is like Hearts who are obviously on the path to it, but it's got its own different ways, so you've got to find a way that works some other way to, as I said, excite the fans, but also have it working in a functional way.
That's it, kind of, certainly. I mean, the guys that have done it in Scotland before have been at a lower level. I mean, I don't know how many kind of fans these other guys that would have had involved, but it's certainly nothing like even the number that we've got, albeit our number's no huge. I mean, if we've got 2,000 members and there's maybe 4,000 season ticket holders, but the teams that have done it in the past have been several levels, you know, below that. So this is certainly one of the kind of major clubs around to have experienced it.
There's two things there that I kind of picked up on. The first one being the folk that have been disengaged, there's still an element there. Possibly you hear from the more vocal ones because obviously they're more vocal, but these guys have maybe pledged initially and fallen away and then been quite critical of the Welsh society through possibly more passion than being kind of trying to take the wheels off the track type thing. But how do you plan to kind of to re-engage these guys, and has there been communication steps taken there?
Well, that certainly happened for now, and this is a thing we've spent a lot of time. When you think in terms of the time that we've been involved in it in the past and what the time we spend on it in the future, it's going to be quite exceptional the amount of time we have to relate to. I mean, even now, the number of meetings we've had last week, this week, coming into next week, and it's all to prepare for a situation where there is much, much more information going out there very, very soon, very, very quickly, to explain to the guys just exactly how we see things moving forward. We probably would have to accept that in years going by, I mean, probably going way back even before Craig's time, when, I mean, Alison was here for a while, but once Alison had left, we were in limbo a wee bit there, and that caused a wee bit of, kind of trouble and being seen to be doing things properly. Plus, I think, as you said, I mean, the guys that are getting a bit disillusioned by it all, because it wasn't quite taking shape and just as quickly as was probably first thought. But I think that we'll spend as much time on it as we need this next few weeks. It can't happen overnight, but over this next few weeks, there'll be an awful lot more information coming out to let everybody know just exactly what our plans are in the weeks to come, and what our plans are going to be for the future, to allow the fans to have a clearer path to relating to us.
Yeah,
I think it's all about, as well, as I've said, consulting with. Maybe you can't do the day-to-day decisions where members get a vote on, but you can definitely communicate it a lot better with them. And now that you're their owners, it's really your way of things are getting done. It's not a case of you're kind of on the outside looking in. It's the Welsh side's way of doing it. So it is the fans who need to be kept in the loop while all that is going on. So I think it is regular meetings, regular communication, where you can, go to them for the opinion and votes where necessary. I think as well, looking at the board breaks, I think the board has all made a kind of huge commitment, and it's about the board, getting out and people's speaking to people on match days, speaking to people at events. The new board vacancy we've got, we've had about 15 applicants already for that, and it's been different kind of age, I don't know if it's males, females as well. So I think that's showing that there is an interest in different people getting involved in different faces, and I think different people can apply to different, areas of ground or demographics that they support. So having those different faces on the board and different skills and expertise, I think definitely helps.
That's the one point that was on my mind, actually, guys, thinking in terms of the numbers that we have that are interested in the one directorship place there is just now on the Welsh Society. And it probably lets you see that all of a sudden the interest is there, although it had waned, for a while. Way back at the very beginning, when the Society still started up, the four directors were being appointed, and there was something like 22 or 24 people applied. Now, over that period of time, some of the directors have kind of fallen by the wayside, and others have been invited to come along and take their place. I mean, I've been involved in that process, and the secretarial work, Craig's been involved kind of more recently. Every time that's happened, there's never been any more than four applications for it. And all of a sudden, as Craig says, at this point, there's 15, and I'll bet there's more to come. That just probably does let you see that all of a sudden, maybe the interest is there now. Yeah. It hadn't been there for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one bugbear, I'll not speak on behalf of Jay because he's not here, but the application process, and there was a bit of uploading of CVs and things like that, and it became, for want of a better word, it became a bit boring, and you're looking at these things and you're having to sift through all people's personal achievements and everything else. Yeah. When you're wanting to relate to someone on that board, then I think the idea of having more of a presence about the society, basically what you alluded to there, that's a massive thing.
One of the big things that we know we will have to do in the future, and we will have more people involved with the society that will allow us to do that more and do that better, to find a way of giving the fans the members, maybe not so much the fans and the members, that direct contact with us, because there should be more of us involved. It was very, very difficult, for half a dozen of us, to relate to everybody. If we had 2,000 members and there's only 6 people there, if you get 2,000 members and you get 20 people around, I think we can see now that the support will be there that has not been there in the past, and that'll make it a difference, and that'll make it easier for us to communicate longer and better than ever we did in the past. And I've got to admit, you know, it's not been perfect in the past in any shape or form, especially probably in that limbo kind of period.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's got better this last wee while, but it's got to get better again, and it will get better again. I mean, the guys will see that in the weeks to come. It will get better again.
I've just gone in the board, because as you said about the full thing about, you know, getting a bit bored and having to go through CVs and all that. I think on this one we've just kind of left it open-ended, and you know, I'm going back to people and just saying, you know what, send me a little bio on yourself. You know, that doesn't have to be, that can be about your experience following Motherwell, what you think you can bring to the board, not a list of your qualifications, because let's be honest, you need real fans there. It's not about, you know, you obviously need some business expertise on the board and whatever else, but you need real fans as well. You need,
yeah,
you know, it can be more about somebody who's, you know, got all, you know, the best degree, might not relate to the fans the best way. There might be somebody who's never been to university, but I tell you what, they know a lot about Motherwell, they're passionate about the club, and they're able to get out there and, you know, really get people excited again. So that's what we need on that.
Were you more thinking back to the time when it was there initially and there was 22 of them? Because if there was 22 of them, it would be 22 A4 pages of stuff to read through.
It was basically just a PDF or a Word file that I downloaded and then had to. And to be honest, I disregarded it after about 2 minutes.
But was that at the time, or way back at the very beginning, when the first four were appointed?
No.
There's never been any more than three or four since then, so wouldn't they have taken a lot of reading these last few times, because there was never any more than four people put their names forward for it?
Yeah, I just thought the way it was presented was pretty...
Probably the way in the past we stuck to that.
You want to see it. How a fan can relate to you, how, what they're going to do for the club, what they're going to do for the society.
Yeah, I think as a supporter and a season ticket holder, I want to kind of relate to the people on the board. Mm-hmm. And I think at times, and not for the want of trying, I think the board have been slightly faceless at times, and that's something that you've already alluded to and said that needs to be put right.
That's something that does need to change. And probably the only way you can do that is to have more meetings that they're going to be invited to, question and answer sessions, or more of your presence, you know, here on a Saturday before the game. And again, a couple of weeks ago in the Cooper Stand, what we decided then was we would all go to the Cooper Stand, because if you've got one or two there, one or two there, one or two there, this wasn't working too well. But that time in the Cooper Stand, I mean, we all went there for an hour and a half or so before the game, and that seemed to work better, because all of a sudden we had a better opportunity to talk to more and more and more people for the hour, an hour and a half. I mean, you can't be there and talk to people at 10 o'clock in the morning. You're only going to get them turning up there at 1 o'clock. You've only got an hour or an hour and a half, you know, to relate to them. We did it better in that situation where we were all there. And that was, again, only maybe six or seven people. If there's 20 odds there, you've got a chance of doing that in the Cooper Stand, the East Stand, you know, the Millennium, the Centenary, wherever you want to go. So I think we know that we need to improve that, and we will.
And I think then that's the starting point, you know, getting out. Well, it's a big part of it, getting out and meeting people and being that face and hearing their opinions. But then once you hear their opinions, something's got to be done. And I don't mean that when somebody complains about something that's, you know, they're correct and this should change at the club just because of one person's view or whatever. But we're just, you know, kind of meeting about that. The credibility has to be there from the Welsh side. Like I said, fans' views have to be heard. Yeah. You know, as you said, not everyone can be perfect. Not everyone can be, you know, your opinion might vary dramatically from somebody else's, but we've got to be out there listening to people and trying to look at the main topics and looking to, you know, somewhat change where we can or help where we can. Say, for example, you know, one of the big issues they talk about is ticket pricing. Educate, you know, fans why price is that way it is at the current time, and I'm just picking that example off the top of my head. Educate them on why the prices are currently stand. This is what we're trying to do, to get young fans in. This is what we could do in the future. What's your thoughts on it? And then looking to address things like that. So the credibility has to be there. You have to listen to people's opinions and then look to act on it. And as we've said before, it won't be overnight that it won't be everybody's happy with everything that's done, but at least if I've seen they've got a soundboard to put their opinions across, they've got an avenue where they can get involved, they've got faces that they can put to it, then it can make a positive difference.
The other point I was going to make was the Foundation of Hearts, which has obviously been very successful, and particularly I've seen stuff with Brian McCafferty and Anne Budge in the past, and it was very complimentary, the work that she's done there. But I suppose the marked difference was the gates were about to be closed at Tynecastle. They were looked to be in their last legs. And sometimes I think that people's perception from the outside might be that the fan ownership's a last resort, and or not even as much that, that they'll donate when the signs are about to be put up in the door. And that's, but now it's only show in town. The Welsh Society are running the club. How important is it to get the message out that
I think what you say is kind of
the membership needs to get there before these signs do get put up in the door, basically.
That's very true. That is the big difference. I mean, at Hearts, they wouldn't have survived if the fans hadn't been prepared to kind of chip in that way. I suppose the difference is they've got 9,000 guys, you know, because they've got 16,000 watching them every week, so they've got the numbers that we wouldn't have had. But certainly, I mean, they've done very, very well. There's no doubt about that. But when you think about it, it was a bit different in that it's something, an opportunity that we've got, not because we were about to disappear, kind of fall by the wayside, but, you know, it probably is the only way to go forward. We haven't got that divine right, you know, to expect that there's always going to be a white knight there just writing a cheque out, you know, every year in life because we want to spend 500 grand, kind of more than we've got in income. We've got to live within our means. And, you know, more and more clubs, I think, are going to go that way in the future. I mean, well, why should we expect that somebody's going to keep on giving us 500 grand, a million quid, because we decide to go and spend more than we can generate? Why should this entity here be any different to my firm at home or your household situation? You've got to work within the confines of the income you've got, and we've got to do that, and that is the only way it's going to be in the future. So, and I suppose the more support we get from Welsh Society members, you know, prepared to commit a bit more and a bit more, there's always that wee bonus to the income that we can generate from the normal sources to help along the way. And I just think that's the way it's going to have to be. And I'll bet others will go that way in due course, because there's not very many white knights out there that's going to keep on throwing money at us. There's a few around, but they're falling by the wayside. And we haven't got a divine right to expect that. So is there another alternative? Is there a better alternative? I don't see it.
I don't want to kind of throw stones at previous regimes, but the budgeting has always been something that's been discussed, and particularly budgeting for top six or cup runs. Cup runs in particular in recent years just haven't happened, unfortunately. And there was a lot of criticism aimed at the club as a result of that, that we're basically very lucky at times to be finishing best of the rest in third place, because if it had went the other way, it could have been pretty drastic. And then under Ian Barraclough, or the start of the season, Stuart McCall, obviously it didn't go so well, and we're fighting down at the bottom of the league and survived by the skin of our teeth. How important is it to get that right as well, that we're not spending out with our means? Even last season, there seemed to be a lot of new faces arriving, particularly close to the transfer window, and it seemed like panic buying, it seemed like desperation. And when it's a fan-owned club, you're sitting back looking, what's going on here?
That's something that we've got to do differently, do better, because we cannot face that situation again, because there'll no be somebody there that's going to throw money at us if we get it wrong and spend money on players that we should be spending. And we've been very, very conscious of that situation. And the due diligence we did, looked into these things, we spent a lot of time on it. I mean, we have regular access to quality financial information, you know, from the club, and that is one thing going forward. We don't have a problem. We are cash positive going forward for this next 2 years, so that looks good, and that's cash positive only allowing to finish in the lower reaches of the league and not having a cup run. If we can finish up in the higher reaches of the league and at long last get a decent wee cup run, we probably will have funds there that would be in excess of what we've got just now. But the position we've got just now is won't give us a financial problem in the next. We've got it in detail for the next 2 seasons, and we expect to be in good order for the next 2 seasons. So from that point of view, it's going well. And what we need to do in the future, we can't keep on afford to pay an outrageous sums of money, you know, for kind of guys that we're bringing up from England, and you know, to paying larger salaries, you know, paying transfer fees. we're going to have to bring the, and I think we've said that all the way along, we're going to have to bring our own guys in. We're going to have to get the guys for the academy coming through, and then coming through the under-20s and through that. And I don't think there's any doubt that situation is as good here as it's been for years. So that surely gives us a better opportunity going forward to thrive and survive, you know, more so than we might have done when it's been a wee bit more of a struggle more recently.
I mean, as the only thing I'd say on top of what Tom's saying, it is an unbelievably tough balancing act to strike in this league, because you've seen how close it is. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
One week, you know, you get, you know, the Inverness game, you're looking at after that, everything's doom and gloom. A great performance against Ross County, and then, you know, a disappointing defeat against Dundee. So it's up and down all season. You looked at it last year, you know, as you said, where it was looking at the possibility of being down there, being in the playoffs, and then you end up in the top six. So it is about the balancing act, making sure you know you live within your means. You're budgeting for finishing the bottom half, but at the same time you're aiming to be a lot higher. You are getting those quality young players coming through and giving them a chance in the first team. But it's a difficult balance act to strike for not just Motherwell, for every club, because you literally don't have those teams that, albeit you have Celtic who are going to win the league, you don't have another team who's, you can see, really falling away at the bottom, or you don't have anybody.
No,
outside there's maybe a top three or four. Outside that is anybody's game.
Yeah, it looks bad just now, yet we're 2 points away from sixth, aren't we? You know, and yet it looks so bad. You know, you win one game and you're sixth again, probably. Mm. And it's just so tight, and no doubt that's the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. But a good result or two. Look at some of the disappointing performances recently by referees. You know, the, some of the decisions that have gone against us, we could have been sitting with three or four more points, and we could have been in the top six if these idiots. Can I say that about them?
No, absolutely. It's just lucky that you already sit in the stand, I suppose, because you'll be sitting beside the manager on Saturday, I think. But I suppose that's kind of personally another thing that I picked up on in all the stories from after the takeover, that Leslie's money will come from initially the sale of players. Is there any pressure on the club and the Welsh society in particular to be selling players? There's, again, it's been another bugbear, I suppose, that guys have left the club at vastly reduced prices. The Marvin Johnson one, personally I'm not clear on how much or how that deal went down, but previously a lot of guys have left for buttons, basically when we valued them at a much higher
rate. I think that's probably right in the past, and I think everybody would admit that that's been a wee niggle and a wee problem in the past, where we have been in a situation where events have been such that people have walked away and we haven't got kind of quality money for. We'd have to say that was wrong, that shouldn't have happened in times gone by. But again, we need to be kind of more and more careful about that, and try like hell to make sure that doesn't happen in the future. And certainly when you were saying there about the pressure, no pressure in any shape or form. We know that we've got to try and find a way of generating some funds in the future to repay the loans. But Les Hutchison is not going to put pressure on us to insist that we need to sell a player if we don't feel we're getting quality kind of money for it. And if Chris Cadden's going to go, for instance, or Shining Light kind of right now, he wouldn't go anywhere unless we were happy that you get decent quality money from him. And Les Hutchison, to be fair to him, is not going to come along and insist that we sell our players simply because he needs to get some money back. That's where the funds are going to come from to repay him for a period of 3 years. But it's going to be our decision. It's not going to be Les Hutchison that's going to put pressure on us to say that we must sell players whether we like it or not. As long as it's our decision, that's fine, to my mind.
How big a statement of intent then was it to have Chris Cadden commit to a new deal as well so soon after the takeover? A bit of good news falling, a bit of good news, and a young guy that we were worried about perhaps leaving the same way as you've discussed.
That was a superb bit of business. So if we can do a wee bit more of that, we'll be jumping for joy in kind of years to come, because that's excellent, the fact that he extended his contract by another year. And it means then you've surely got a better opportunity of getting some quality money for him in years going by. And we probably need to accept that whether we like it or not, you know, we've probably got to be a selling club, you know, and because the guys, if they're that good, they're probably going to look to extend their careers elsewhere. And is that just the way of life? That's the way it's going to be. If we get the right amount of money for it, we're probably just going to accept they're going to do that.
Who isn't a selling club in this country?
Well, it's
any of the right, but you know, to look at scale, even when you look at, you know, Celtic, if they get the right money in for the big players, they're passing them on and bringing in new players. So, as in, you know, touching on the kind of pressure side of thing, and Tom's more kind of on the side of the financial thing, so you can stop me if I'm wrong here, but the pressure would more come if we had a fixed loan repayment. We're under pressure to meet it by a certain deadline where you have to, you know, and you're putting the club at risk by doing stuff like that. But the way it is just now is, you know, it's based on the transfers. There's no pressure. You sell when the, you know, when it's right for the club, when it's right for the player and all parties. So it was, you know, very much, if Tom tell you know better than me, it was a deal that was right for the club and that offered a chance to be sustainable and to push the club forward the best deal possible.
What will be the lasting legacy of Leslie's time at Motherwell? There was ups and downs. It was very interested in the society and very supportive, but towards the end it got a bit quiet, and perhaps during the down period that we've already talked about. But do you think he's been a positive over his time? You guys will know, be able to paint a much clearer picture, certainly.
Yeah, I think he's been a positive because he's been well prepared to see us through some awkward times and put us in a position and allow us to have an agreement with him which is not going to put the club at risk in due course. And he's been very, very supportive of the Well Society. He wanted to kind of see this happening and he's helped us along the way. You know, we've spent a long time negotiating with him. It dragged on probably for a bit longer than we probably thought it would initially, because that was primarily because we wanted to make sure that we had a quality deal for the Well Society that was never going to put, or for the club, that was never going to put the club in danger. And I think we've got that. And he obviously was an element of allowing us to come to that arrangement with him. He's not insisted on making it, as Craig referred to there, with huge fixed repayments that probably may well give us a problem or two, you know, if we went through a season or two and we're not able to kind of sell any players. So I don't think for that point of view, I think he's been good. But then again, even further back, I mean, the whole thing was started by John Boyle, so it's not just Les Hutchison that's seen the kind of fan ownership as being a priority kind of for him. John Boyle was the one that started that move. It didn't quite happen in his time, but they've both been very supportive of the society. They both wanted us to be in control, and we've got there with the help of both of them.
I think, and as well, I can't really say much about John Boyle. It was kind of before my time, but you know, obviously, you know what Tom's saying about what he kind of brought. But let's say, you've got to say, he came in and he said quite clearly to the Welsh Society and to the club and to the fans, it was, you know, a hand up, not a hand out. He was getting that was his phrase.
That was always his favourite phrase.
He was honest in that. He didn't want to be around here for long term, and it was to, you know, to push it towards the Welsh Society, and you know, that's evidently what we've achieved.
It was a very charismatic character, to say the least.
That's one word.
I think our podcast with him, there's still people listening to it to this day to hear the line about what the biggest room in the house was and everything else. But there was at times where some of the stuff seemed quite harmful that was being said in the press, and kind of almost to press the panic button. But was it that close, and was it that desperate at times that the fans had to be alerted to the fact that if things don't go our way, then it could be a very dangerous situation?
I honestly don't think that Les Hutchison would have, you know, kind of walked away without being sure he had left us in a position to go forward. would it have come in years to come if it dragged on for years and years and years and we weren't in a position to come to a deal with him? But I don't think he'd ever any intention, you know, to suggest that he was going to walk away and let the company fall by, the club fall by the wayside. He was going to find a way to come to a deal with us that would allow us to kind of thrive and survive going forward, and that's what we've got, I would say.
Sorry, I've just actually grabbed this because it was in front of us, but it was just kind of moving on to the membership numbers, and one thing that we'll all have noticed this season is the decrease in the home attendances, which has been quite evident over the last couple of years. A slight dip, but it carries on to another dip, to another dip, to another dip. So it's possibly at a time where the Motherwell fans are feeling slightly disengaged with the club. At the same time, we've become a fan-owned football club, so it's a there's two kind of contrasting elements to that there. There's been an appointment of a fan engagement officer as well, and you kind of see all these people try to reach out to the supporters. Is there a tie-in there where everyone's working together? It's hard to understand. You've got a fan-owned football club, you've got a fan engagement officer, there's a prospect of SLOs, and then also society volunteers who are trying to engage with the fans as well. I don't want to say overkill, because I don't know what Ryan does. But it's just some things kind of almost need to be explained in terms of there seems to be a lot of people doing a very similar.
I think that's certainly what we will explain in some detail, very very soon now. And I agree with what you say. I mean, there just seems to be, you know, endless numbers maybe involved. But we need numbers. But we need numbers in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time. We don't have enough in the past. The Welsh Society only had maybe between their directors, maybe seven people, and we've been one short for a while. We have not had the numbers we need. We need more support in some shape or form. Maybe they don't all need to be directors, or they don't all need to be SLOs or fan relationship officers. But we need bodies in place. And if we don't have bodies in place, how can you relate to the kind of fans on match days if the bodies aren't there? We've never been able to do it as well as we'd like to have done it in the past if there's only six or seven there. So we need to find a way of getting more and more people involved, and that's the one thing we need to just kind of set out, and we're planning that. We've got a meeting with Ryan, he's new, you know, I've never met him, you know, but we've got a meeting with him on Thursday night. And that's one of the guys. He's got a lot of experience down south. Was it Doncaster?
Yeah,
he was with. So he's got a lot of experience in that kind of situation. And he's going to be one of the guys we're going to talk to in some detail and begin to really kind of put our plan in place properly. The bones of it are there. More than the bones of it are there. Maybe we need to tweak it a wee bit before it's released. But when you're saying that, you're mentioning the numbers that are attending the games. I don't know if you're maybe suggesting that surely the numbers having dropped a wee bit has no relationship to the fact that the Welsh Society have taken over with the club, but is it just something that's happened recently?
I don't think
fan ownership has been the reason, surely, that numbers have dropped off.
No, absolutely not. I wasn't putting them both hand in hand. What my point was that there's been a noticeable... I don't know whether I would call it unfortunate, certainly not unfortunate, actually, but the fact that the Welsh Society have gained control of the club at a time where attendances are on the slide. They're not just at Fir Park, but across the board in Scottish football.
The point I was going to make, when you go to Hamilton and you go to Ross County and you go to, you know, kind of Fir Hill and places like that, they've all got the same trouble. But maybe fan ownership will G them up a wee bit, and we'll see things getting a bit better again. That's what you surely like to think.
You mentioned the overkill. I agree with you, and that's why we need to make sure it's done right. You know, you've got a, you know, fan engagement manager who's working on, we're all working together essentially, but you clearly can establish who's involved, what's the channels of communication with the club, what he's actually doing to improve it. And I think when you tie it all in together, the club and the website working together, it's, you know, fan ownership's taking over, the fan engagement officer's working on this and this to try help improve the experience of Fir Park. We've got this channel for the Welsh Society members to have their say around issues at the club. Things are improving in those ways, but I agree with you, it's a good balance you've got to strike, because it can't just be the scattergun of, you know, fan ownership's taking over, we're going to absolutely bombard you with different people and different avenues, as you said, and that's why it's important us working with Ryan, looking at the SLOs and looking that they really serve the purpose that they're meant for, rather than just being you know, extra bodies and yeah. overkill. So that's what we're defining through, and that's why again the SLOs have taken a bit, you know, a bit longer than we wanted. It was really easy just to say. I mean, at first we were meeting and speaking to a few people, and it did seem a really good idea. And you know, as looking across the continent and across even the UK with SLOs coming in, but you know, as we've learned in the past, we've jumped in with a plan, and then it's not worked the way expected. So it was get it right, make sure the SLOs are doing the right job for the club, and make sure the fan engagement is correct. And before jumping into, you know, throwing everything out to the fans, and I think that on top of regular meetings like Q&As and regular opportunities for the board to go out and meet people is all quality communication. So I think it's all about, as you said, getting it all right. And I think, as you said about attendances, I think you can get everything right off the pitch. Reality is, fans will start coming by the product on the pitch. You know, I mean, that's the most important thing. So it's important we do everything we can in our club, but it's also, you know, results on the pitch bring attendances in.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no doubt that I think there's varying factors. There's various kind of alternatives to football now as well. Even we talk about it so often, the Glasgow Warriors rugby, the Brayhead Clan, the Glasgow Rocks, these guys are all...
I think the Glasgow Warriors rugby in particular, because they've done so very, very well recently. My daughter is right into her, and her husband are right into their rugby, and I've been in it a couple of games with my daughter when her husband hasn't been able to go. And it's a smashing experience in there, and the stadium's usually full, but their own. There's a Glasgow Warriors team and a team in Edinburgh. It's not as if there's dozens of them up and down the country. If people in the west of Scotland want to go and see a bit of rugby, they can only go to one place, really, can't they? You know, so it's an easy catchment for them, and there's plenty of guys into the rugby.
It is too, but at the same time, there is, and there's no doubt that I know people personally that had season ticket holders for many years that now go to the ice hockey. Mm-hmm. That's their Saturday night, because they can go to Brayhead at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they can have a couple of beers, mm-hmm. they can have beers in the stadium, they enjoy the entertainment side of it.
They do the same at the rugby too, you get a beer in the stadium at the rugby too. You know,
but are these direct competitors now? Because it seems to me that they are. Ticket pricing, yes, it's taken away the weather at times at this time of year. Dragging yourself out can be a bit of a chore. The quality in the pitch, but that's another thing that's...
I would say, I don't know anyone personally that goes to the rugby rather than come here. Mm. My daughter and my son-in-law have both been rugby guys forevermore, and they've probably built up that relationship when they were in Australia and New Zealand for a while. But they haven't changed their allegiance. They didn't come to Fir Park before and change their mind and go to, you know, the Glasgow Warriors or the ice hockey or whatever. So I don't know anyone that's for them. There obviously is some. You know some yourself.
They
tend to suggest they aren't in competition with us, aren't they?
Yeah. I
think this is just purely from a personal point of view. I think things like the SLO and the fan engagement seem improving that kind of relationship between the fans and maybe the stewards and the way they're treated when they come to the game. As you said, the things in this country, like you can't go to a game and have a beer at the game. You know, I mean, it just makes you, you know, it's your entertainment, it's your Saturday, you've been working all week. You want to go and enjoy yourself at the game, have a beer, you know, not be told what to do or kind of told in a certain manner. So it's about striking a balance between that and, you know, yeah, I think fans, and I'm not applying this to Mother, I'm applying this kind of broadspin. I think fans are getting a bit, you know, annoyed when you hear about fans going, you know, going up to Aberdeen and their bus is searched, or, you know, coming off and they've got a camera right in their face. You know, it does put people off. You know, it does put the decent fans off coming to get, which is the vast majority. So I think things like SLOs in this country, not that we have a great problem, you know, here, but it is important about bridging that gap between, you know, what needs to be done in terms of security point of view at games and actually improving the fan experience, because I think it is poor when you know, as a normal fan, you go somewhere and you feel as if you're, you know, being treated like a kid, or you're being treated as if you can't behave yourself to, you know, to have a beer and not act a certain way. So I think Scottish football's got to go a long way, and I think it's got to get to the stage, and as I said, it's a wide thing rather than just Motherwell, but it has to be a way when you're, you know, there's an element of trust with fans, and there's an element of letting them enjoy themselves. I think more in the competition, you know, for guys like us, rugby or ice hockey will never compete with football. We want to watch football. But if you're being treated in a certain way and you think it's more enjoyable to go somewhere else, it might turn someone else's head.
But with the guys you were thinking about and you seem to know, did they choose to go to these places because they can sit and have a beer? You know, and they're inside and it's no being arranged.
I think it generally was the standard, and I think it's easy to look back to years ago and having Larson and Loudrop and all that up against you, and now you see some of the duds that Rangers have got, or some of the duds that Celtic, and you think, well, the standard has slipped. But I think it was just kind of the treatment at some away grounds and just generally getting a bit scunnered, to be honest.
That's got to get better. We can't do other.
These are people.
SPFL and the hierarchy have got to begin to do something about these things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To improve that experience. We can help along the way, but we can't do it on our own.
That's what I was going to say. I think being a fan owned club, I think it's important we can lead the way in things like that. And you know, it is about engagement with fans. And maybe we can't change, you know, rules or things that the SPFL or SFA decide on, but we can certainly try and represent the views of the fans a lot better and push that forward.
We can put a point forward quite forcefully. Might not change their mind, but we can make it. That's been something. Having a beer has been something that's been spoken about, I understand, a fair wee bit kind of recently. Doesn't look as if it's ever going to change in the short term, but that's just one of the things you think, you know.
I mean, just kind of going on our point, I was across listening to the Canary Cello from Bronby, and he was just talking about how bad things were actually over there. They'd go to games and trains would be absolutely destroyed, there'd be non-stop violence, and then, you know, the SLO started work with the authorities. For example, they put no police on the train, and this is just, you know, just a kind of story, kind of a wee bit off map, but they'd take the police off the trains, they would give them a bit of trust, they would let them let the SLOs and let themselves police them, and it turned into a much better atmosphere, a lot less violence. It just showed you how it's not necessarily watching people and keeping an eye on them, restricting them, it's giving people a bit of trust to do that.
Jason Craig, was it not the case that one of the SLOs that were appointed over there had been one of the hoodlums, effectively, that took some responsibility for changing it, and it all did help. But that's what, as you say, maybe getting off the track a wee bit.
To bring it back, I think it's clear that going to football is an easy habit to fall out of as well, isn't it?
I don't think it is.
I suppose personally for me it's not, but I've seen it, and certainly the figures reflecting that there's people that have been there that are now not taking their season ticket. You don't take your season ticket with £20 at the gate. Will I bother? Will I maybe do something else with my Saturday? Will I maybe go and see the Brayhead Clan? And
I know guys that are in that position. I know guys that have been Motherwell supporters the same age as me, and they were coming to games for years and years and years and years going by. But you was up talking to that wall there as encouraging them to come back now. They just seem to think that maybe the quality of football they're seeing, and that's a fact, the quality of the football obviously isn't the same as it might have been in years gone by. But if you're a football man and a Motherwell supporter through and through, have you not just got to try and find a way through that and don't desert the club because maybe there's some bad times just now? Find a way to make it better. Find a way to make our good quality guys coming through the academy, coming through the under-20s. And let's get a better kind of team out in that park. And will these guys start to come back? Maybe the quality of what they're seeing recently, you know, hasn't encouraged them to do so.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, when the quality's not there, and there's no doubt about it, Scottish football, the quality's not there that it was years ago. But for me, you know, the money's not there to bring in players from different, you know, who've tried that in the past. You know, it has to be the young players coming through. And for me, I'd rather see, rather than, you know, players, you know, picking up the last paycheck, you'd rather see young players who maybe will make mistakes, but they can excite you. You know, the likes of Chris Catton get you off your feet, and you see local, you know, kind of local boys that you think represents your club. You'd rather see that in young players. I think that would brings fans back more than players coming on loan. And you know, I'm not saying there's no place for some, you know, experienced players, but I think you'll get more fans come in as they see more young, exciting players come through.
And I think that's the way we've got to go to secure the financial kind of position of the club in the future, as well as the fact that if we're bringing through local guys, you know, maybe it will begin to interest the local community a bit more. So it's going to kill two birds with one stone in that scenario. Mm. Get them coming through and maybe encourage the fans to come back, because we're bringing through some good quality players that have been well looked after for their 10, 11-year-old all the way through. And see if you could bring them through, but it helps the finances of the club as well. So we need to see it different in the years to come.
It certainly wouldn't be a bad thing to say that the Murdoch Football Club is a team where we're bringing some of the quality back and some of the entertainment levels. I do think there is a wee bit of illness in every team to be trying to make the standard better, because there is some really poor games. But saying that, I suppose that is across the board. Down south, there's plenty of poor games on the telly and everything else. But because Sky say it's the best league in the world, that doesn't matter. But I think,
and there's the Sky money that should be able to make that every game down there should be absolutely superb. The money these guys are getting, but I watch television a lot, and there's a lot of games down there that are just as bad as what we see up here.
I think you look at even just for example, Scottish Cup final this year and the FA Cup final. I mean, I can't even remember what the score was in the FA Cup final or how they get. I just remember half falling asleep watching it. Whereas the Scottish Cup final was all right. It's maybe not the same quality as the English, but it was end to end exciting. Two games, teams going for it. So, some of the games you see up here are better than we. You know, I think part of it is the negative press.
Giving our game a kick, we should be singing its praises when there is something good happening to.
Just helping the national team deflate every month or so.
We kind of really help that.
We probably do need to see kind of, you know, better quality players around that can maybe be better consistently. We've got guys out there that can play out their skin against Hamilton and play out their skin against Ross County. Then they're exactly the opposite in other games they play. But
that's some of the excitement of youth as well. James McFadden was never perfect week in, week out.
But what he could do and exceptional. And that's the whole thing. I mean, I think that's the thought we've got about some of the younger players coming through. I wasn't at Parkhead, but I'm told that the young McMillan at the back
and Ross McLean both played very well. Yeah.
But the thought was thereafter, I was thinking, if they can play that well at Parkhead, they can play well anywhere. But they're just young guys, and you're not going to get that complete consistency for young boys kind of week after week after week. So therefore, they were brilliant in there. They really were good when you think that cauldron in there, and they were very good. I wasn't there, but I was away on holiday. Very good. But then you'd maybe look at other games they play, and you think, well, how can they not play as well up at Dundee?
And it will happen, won't it? They'll be brought in and given their chance, and they might have to be taken out if they make a mistake, to protect themselves sometimes as much as the team, because if you're playing poorly and perhaps the fans start to get on your back a wee bit, you don't want to destroy a young boy when he's just making his first steps in the game. So
that's where the management have got to make that quality decision and decide, you know, when they're in and when they're out, because they're maybe it would have to be something really exceptional if they're going to come in and play out their skin week after week after week.
Yeah, they would possibly be in the team already as well.
You made the point about kind of fans getting on their backs or whatever. It happens with you know, they go into their first game, their debut, there's not much expected. They've got nothing to lose. Adrenaline carries them through, and then they find themselves two or three games and everybody's talking about them and there's a bit of pressure on them, and then when they can't deliver, fans are wondering why. So it's just the pressures of being a player, and I think every young player is, as you said, McFadden, when he first broke through, was inconsistent.
I mean, it's nasty. And as you remember, kind of something happened I was in the main stand and just in front, I can't even remember for sure which game it was in, but it was somebody screaming, you know, from half a dozen rows back about this guy being a disaster and making a mistake here. It was a young guy. And I said, well, look, the guy isn't going to be brilliant every time. It's no fair, you know, to decry one of the young boys that looks as if he could be a good player for us in the long term. But he's not necessarily going to be superbly brilliant every game he plays. So don't take that approach with the young guys. But a bad game, give him a wee rest and he'll maybe come in for a fortnight and play as well as he did before. You know, but I just don't understand people that would take that approach to our young boys that are coming through. That is our future. And don't upset them to that extent. Give them a chance. They're not going to be brilliant every minute of every game. you say McFadden, Faddy, wasn't he?
we'll kind of finish up with a quick few points in the society, and then we'll look at these games, or look back in Dundee, and then look at the Thistle game. The feels of emotion in terms of the society have certainly supported the podcast with our signing night, the quiz coming up. Are things like that beneficial in terms of it gets people along? It's maybe a more enjoyable side than a Q&A or a meeting sometimes that people definitely, that are members can get along and definitely have a night out.
We want to have as many events as that as possible and try different things. As you said, working with you guys at the podcast, it gives us a different, you know, a wee bit of a different audience, a different, you know, kind of look at things. It's, as you said, you know, you guys in the podcast have, you know, maybe been critical of things about sites. So it's not a case of just, you know, just doing your Q&As and speaking from one voice. It's about getting everybody involved. That's what fan ownership's about. And as you said, people agree with you, people don't agree with you. And having nights that are informative, like Q&As that have to happen, and having other nights like quiz nights with yourself that people can actually enjoy. And on the back of that, we can have sign up, we can be around talking to people. And if they want to sign up on the night, they can. But it's just, as I think we've said in the past, as being a fan-owned club, Firth Park can't just be open once every 2 weeks to fans. This is your club, so come along to events. You know, if it's a weeknight, this should be open a lot more for people. It's your club, it's essentially your stadium, so it should be more open and more, you know, people should enjoy coming to it more.
But some of the things we've had in the past have not always been too well attended. You know, there have been Q&As in the past, and maybe a quiz night, sports quiz nights, a nicer night having a beer and whatever, than maybe a Q&A is. Mm. But you've got to do both. But this probably tends to be disappointing, maybe the numbers you get.
But I think that's something that you need to kind of learn from and not be deterred from as well. If something doesn't work out, persist and keep it going, because it only takes 10 people to attend and talk about it for 20 to come the next time.
That's right, very much so. We've got to keep that going. It's not a matter of saying, there wasn't very many there the last time, we're not going to have another one. there'll be more in the future rather than less.
And I suppose the kind of final key message is to convey the fact that it's not two separate entities now, Motherwell Football Club and the Wales Society, that this is now the only show in town. They're working together as one. And
yeah. I think that's a big thing we've got to get over, and you'll see that in the weeks to come. We're having all our joint meetings with the existing board and Alan Burrows and Ryan, you know, and so on. And we even with the trust as well, you know, we relate to the trust kind of very much now as well. So in the weeks to come, you know, once we really fix everything properly, we've got the bones of how we see things going forward. So in the weeks to come, there'll be a lot more news coming out as to just exactly how we plan to go forward. And that'll make enough of a difference. And I'll let everybody out there know just exactly how we propose to kind of plan, you know, for the future of the club and the Welsh Society. The Welsh Society still exists as a separate entity, but Welsh Society and the club now, you know, I suppose in theory it's one entity in total, and that's important to begin to relate to that and accept that more and more in the future.
And not just to the individual fans, also to the businesses are a big part of it, because, you know, in the past I think it's maybe been the clubs wanted, you know, to approach businesses for sponsorship for this and that, and then the Welsh Society's been, you know, doing the same, and then maybe Youth Academy are asking for, and then the Community Trust. So what has been, you know, made important in the last, you know, since the ownership changes, that we all work together and, you know, make sure our message going out to, you know, businesses is the same, so that, you know, whether a business wants to sponsor, you know, sponsor a match, or they want to put money on the Welsh Society, or they want to help the Youth Academy or help with the Community Trust, it's all helping this place. You know, we're all working together rather than all trying to, you know, sort of compete with each other.
Aye, but certainly talking to these guys in the future, it will be one concerted effort to talk to them. A lot of the guys the guys we know personally have, you know, a situation where they love to support the academy. If business guys out there want to do that, you know, they'll maybe have that preference to support the academy rather than the trust, or rather than sponsor matches or whatever. But the main thing in the future is we will all be together, and we will have one concerted approach to these people in the past. Whereas, as Craig was alluding to there, we might have had three or four in the past. The academy did their own thing, we did our own thing, the club did their own thing, and the trust did their and that's not been the way to do it in the past. But there was always that wee niggle in the past, you know, because they've all, and historically they've always operated as separate entities. This is a big time where it's all got to come together.
That's brilliant, guys. What we'll do is we'll quickly go over the Dundee defeat. We lost 2-0, we scored a goal, the ref didn't give it, and then pretty much went downhill from there. But the chance to bounce back is Saturday in Partick Thistle for Park. And Tom, it's so strange how a few weeks can change things. Craig talked about that earlier, the 4-1 victory against Ross County, where we absolutely played them off the park, scored some great goals, could have scored more. And then followed up by a drab, disappointing display at Dens Park. We're so up and down, but this is a game against a struggling Thistle team that would need a positive result in front of our home fans.
Well, that's it. I mean, this is very much a six-pointer. Having said that, I said the same about the Inverness game and the Dundee game. There were six-pointers and we only won one of them. But we need to get back in the rails on Saturday, and no doubt about that. And I think, I mean, Dundee, we were up at Dundee. I mean, it wasn't a good performance in any shape or form. For long, long spells, Dundee weren't really any better than us. And if we'd got that goal, you could see it was a goal a mile. I mean, you could see from the other end of the park. You know, I don't know how the referee linesman just couldn't see it at all. And does that change the game if you get a goal at that point? Who knows? I mean, would it have changed the game? Would it have got us G'd up a wee bit more? I mean, just to what extent does a goal like that change the game? And the same with the Thistle in the last time, the disallowed goal was never offside. Do things like that kind of change the game? Maybe no, we were disappointing, to say the least, at Dundee. But if we'd been given that goal, how would that have changed the rest of the game? Could you begin to think positively that it would have changed it for the better? I mean, why could it not have done? But it's everybody just so down, you know, because that happens and you don't get a goal that we probably deserved at the time. But and certainly thereafter, we probably weren't very good, but Dundee weren't a million times better.
Craig, Mark McGee's not had his troubles to seek during the break either with the defeat at Wembley, putting a bit of jeopardy over his role there. He'll be keen to avoid kind of similar stories coming out of our park and Saturday evening with a positive result.
I mean, definitely. I mean, as I've said, it's that title league. The picture changes after one result. So I think in one way it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make Saturday a kind of make or break. But at the same time, as you said, you want, you know, it's your home game. You want to get positivity back around the club after a bad defeat, and you know, so it's a tough one. And as I said, it's a really tough league. But yeah, they'll be keen to bounce back, and I think it would bring good to have the break for the players, you know, after a defeat, to, you know, get back on. They'll be choking to get back out there. So hopefully I can bounce back with a win. And as you said, you know, as Tom's touching on games, just, you know, changing by one decision or one moment. You look at even the Scotland-England game, you know, I know the damage was done in the previous games, but the time we're on at the top, you know, we went and lost the second goal, which has totally killed it off. So just it just kind of shows you. But you know, going back to Saturday, it's a big opportunity, home ground, a very winnable game, and you know, you win that and you're straight back up the league. So it has to be, I think we have to look forward to quite, you know, quite positively.
This starts the kind of run where it'll be 100 mile an hour right into the turn of the year. To start that run of games with a positive result, it's surely a big factor. But there's, you look at the fixtures coming up as well, there's a difficult trip to Tynecastle, game against Celtic at Firth Park. Yep. So these are games Aberdeen. Against in-form sides.
I suppose Aberdeen as well. We've got some tough games.
Yeah, the rearranged game as well.
So the two Aberdeen games in December, won't they? They'll be the rearranged one, then we play them down here. But as you say, a lot of tough games. But you know, I just wonder, almost every game's tough out there these days. You don't need to be playing the Hearts and the Aberdeens to face a tough side. I mean, everybody out there's fighting for points. I mean, the St Johnstons and the Invernesses of this world are fighting for points. Yeah, maybe, I suppose, in theory, the top teams have just got that wee bit more quality. But yeah, it's still tough, you know, kind of playing the lesser teams. And if we play well, we'll get results. If we play badly, we won't. We just would like to see us playing well more consistently, and the results are come. I mean, if the same guys go out on Saturday that played against Ross County, why should they not win the game? If the same guys play against Inverness and Ross County, how could we get beat 3-0 one game and 4-1 the next? I mean, they're just... If I knew the answer to that.
every year as well, the festive period is quite important, and I think more so this year because we've got the January break, so you don't want to go into there in a, you know, bad position. You know, it kind of then goes over right through January into February, and you're starting to get, you know, towards the business end of the season. So it is a real important month, December, so it'd be good to go in there after, you know, a win on Saturday, and then, you know, obviously a couple of games before then, but go into December on a positive, get a couple of good results out of those tough games, and then you're going into January in a nice position.
And that's why I got thinking of December and how tough December was going to be. That's where, I mean, what a difference it would have made if we could have got a positive results against Inverness and Dundee. What a difference it would have made with the confidence of going into the hard games in December, sitting much better in the league and having the confidence of three good performances instead of just one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that does that make it more difficult for the guys coming into December, or are they just up for it more and more and more? Because I think they seem to well admit they let us down badly, and these games have lost, you know, compared to the Ross County game. So does that gee them up a wee bit? Let's hope so.
Guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. I hope that the supporters will find it informative, and if you do, please visit wellsociety.co.uk and sign up and back the cause. The podcast quiz is the 28th of November at the Centenary Suite following the Motherwell Football Club calendar signing. We will also have copies of Off Air on sale as well, so please snap them up and get your Christmas present signed by some of the guys in attendance as well. We'll be back at the start of next week to look back in the Partick Thistle game. Until then, thank you very much and goodbye. One bone.